Good morning.
Good morning.
Ben and Emily and their families out of town this week, so Ben asked me to teach the class for us. This week, if you remember what Ben mentioned, we're up to the when. We've talked about who and what and why, and now we're going to talk about when concerning the assembling of the saints. So I just want to start by asking that question. When do the saints meet? Or maybe another way of asking that is, when should the saints meet?
When the elders call for a meeting.
Okay, so that's one answer. When the elders call for a meeting. One way I've heard this explained is that when you become a part of a congregation and you place your membership under the leadership of the elders, that's a kind of social contract, is one way of explaining it. That, of course, you're not signing any documents, but when you submit to the leaderships of the elders, we have agreed to meet with the church when Bob and Duane appoint times for us to do that. It's a kind of contract that we join into. So that's one answer. When do the saints meet? It's when Bob and Duane, our elders, decide that we meet. When also should the saints meet?
Acts 20 and 7.
Okay. So if you happen to be open there, let's go ahead and turn to that passage. This is just a quick, simple little passage, but it does tell us a lot about the meetings of the first century church. Do you want to go ahead and read that for us, Eddie?
Okay. Now, on the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread, all ready to depart the next day, spoke to them and continued his message unto midnight.
Okay, very good. So, it's a simple passage. The church was assembled, and why were they assembled? They were together to break bread. In other words, they were assembled together to partake of the Lord's Supper. And what's interesting about this is that this is basically our basis for meeting together on Sundays for the purpose of observing the Lord's table. This is essentially the only passage in the Bible that joins taking the Lord's table and meeting together on Sundays. Now, there's numerous examples from history that tell us the same thing, but this is really the only passage in the Bible that does that for us. The thing, though, that makes this especially interesting, it's not a command, it's just an example. But it's an example that assumes that this was the norm. Luke, here in writing this passage, didn't take time to explain or expound on the subject. He just said matter-of-factually, well, on this day, when the saints were together to break bread, Paul decided to wait, which is also interesting. Paul, it sounds like, could have left, but why did he go ahead and wait?
It was to break bread.
Right. He waited deliberately so that he could be with the saints on Sunday so that he could break bread with them. So this is a good example of the way that the church was operating under the guidance of the apostles. And as we've already seen here, the meeting of the saints, the assembly, it's hard to disconnect that from the Lord's table. The subjects do go together. Go ahead, Duane.
Yeah, but you may be going to talk about this, that particular occasion. What actual time and day that was.
Mm-hmm. It was in the evening.
And so it's quite possible it could have been Saturday evening after 6.
Yeah.
Or it could have been, it couldn't have been Sunday evening.
It would have been Saturday
unless
evening.
Unless they partook of it before 5 o'clock.
Yeah, yeah. And we will talk about that. Not yet, but we will.
It could have been on Sunday.
Yeah.
Because we don't know how long Paul talked, but Eutychus fell out of the window
at midnight.
But we don't know if that was
Sunday night, or Saturday night.
Sunday night, but it could possibly be Saturday.
And we'll talk about that subject one way or the other. It does bring up an interesting point that we will talk about. A few more things I want to mention before we move on from the idea of the saints meeting together on Sundays for the purpose of breaking bread. It would be easy for someone to criticize us for taking a position on this. Like I said, Acts 20 verse 7 is the only passage in the Bible that connects meeting together specifically on Sunday for the purpose of observing the Lord's table. Luke mentions this matter-of-factually, and so do other writers from the 2nd and 3rd centuries. I just want to read a few quotations for you so that we can see this is not something new. This is not unique to the churches of Christ as they existed starting at the early 19th century. This is something that existed from the very beginning. So this quotation comes from a man by the name of Ignatius. It's kind of debatable whether he wrote in the early 2nd century or late in the 3rd century, but here's what he says. I'm kind of pulling this selection out of context, but you'll get the idea. He says, "If therefore those who were brought up in the ancient order of things," talking about the Mosaic law, "have come to the possession of a new hope," talking about the new law, "no longer observing the Sabbath, but living in the observance of the Lord's day, on which also our life has sprung up again by him and by his death." I should have mentioned, this particular passage doesn't mention the Lord's Supper specifically, but what does it mention? They came together on the Lord's Day, that they no longer observed the Sabbath, but Christians then came together on the Lord's Day. Here's another quotation. This comes from the Didache. Didache stands for doctrine. Sometimes this is called the Apostles' Doctrine. The Didache is not, in my opinion, a legitimate document, but it does tell us something about what people were saying about Christians, or what people were teaching about Christians. Here's what the Didache says: "But every Lord's Day do ye gather yourselves together and break bread. Every Lord's Day you gather together and break bread, and give thanksgiving after having confessed your transgressions, that your sacrifice may be pure." So what's that little selection say? Every Lord's Day, they were meeting together to observe the Lord's table. And then one more. This comes from Tertullian. He's one among many people that we call the Apostolic Fathers. He wrote in the 2nd century. He says, "Others, with great regard to good manners, it must be confessed, suppose that the Son is the God of Christians, because it is well known, it is a well-known fact that we pray towards the East," apparently he did, "or because we make Sunday a day of festivity." So even by the 2nd century, people like Tertullian had created these strange ideas about what Christians would do. Among them was only praying towards the east, towards the rising sun. But he does mention something interesting, that apparently the Gentiles sometimes thought that the sun must be the God of Christians. And why was that? They prayed that way, and they met on Sunday. Sunday specifically refers to the sun god, and they thought, well, if Sunday is the day that they meet, then apparently the sun must be their god. So this is a really normal thing. It's nothing new that we've decided that Sunday is the day that we should meet, and that Sunday, every Sunday, is the time that we should partake of the Lord's table. I think Ben will probably talk about this more later in other classes, but if the Lord's table does not have a set day to be observed, would it be like any other festival that God has established in the Bible? Not at all. If the Lord's Supper doesn't have a specific day on which it's to be observed, it would be the first of its kind in the Bible. So it's also nothing new that God has a set day for us to do this. It's nothing new that we meet on Sundays, and it's nothing new that God has a day that we should partake of His Supper. Mike, did you have a comment?
Are you going to mention John 20 and 19? When the disciples were gathered on the first day of the week after Jesus arose, He appeared?
Yes, yeah. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about right now. Go ahead, Dwayne.
Maybe we're going to hit this a little later too, but when Paul, writing in 1 Corinthians 11, as often as you eat the bread. So it did have a frequency. It had a that often, I don't know. I've heard that talked about.
Yeah. I mean, it does imply that there was regularity to it, at least.
Yeah.
So concerning the first day of the week, well, let me ask this question first. Why is it so important that we talk about meeting on the first day of the week? Why is this even a relevant discussion?
Well, one reason I think is because God did away with keeping the Sabbath holy, but He had one day a week set apart, just like He rested from His work on the seventh day.
Right.
Then after Christ, we still have the Lord. We have a day set aside for the Lord, but just like the old law was done away with, and the Sabbath was done away with, but the principle continues.
Right. So that is one important point.
Christ rose on the first day of the week.
Right, and we'll talk about all the significant things about the first day of the week. So the reasons why this is a relevant discussion, Mike mentions one of them, that it's important for us to know that the Sabbath is gone and that the first day of the week is God's new day for us to observe. Not every person that considers themselves to be a Christian believes that. I actually work with a few people. They go to the Seventh-day Adventist churches, and their understanding is that the Sabbath is still holy, and it would be inappropriate to use the first day of the week as the holy day for God's people to assemble. So it's important for us to understand that in the context of the Bible and in the context of early church history, the first day of the week was the day, and it always has been the day that Christians assembled, and that the Sabbath has been dissolved. Another thing to remember is, do all Christians even think it's necessary to meet on the first day of the week? Not really. I mean, there's a lot of people. That's why churches have started having their assemblies on Saturday evenings. It's so that you don't mess up the rest of their weekend, so that you can have an extra day off, and so you meet on Saturday nights instead of on Sundays. But when you go through the Bible, Sunday clearly has a very significant place in God's eyes. When did Jesus raise from the dead? On the first day of the week, on a Sunday. And that's important in and of itself, but the Bible emphasizes that. There's not that many things that all four Gospels all share. Not all of the parables, not all of the miracles, not all of the teachings, but all four Gospels talk about, for example, the Lord's table, and they also talk about, all four of them, the rising of Jesus specifically on the first day of the week.
So it was a day of new beginning.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it was. The first day of the week, time of new birth. Also, Mike was getting to this. John records several situations where Jesus appeared to the saints specifically on the first day of the week. After he rose from the dead on the first day of the week, he appeared to them three or four more times again on the first day of the week. We won't read these, but Cleopas and his companions on the road to Jesus appears to them, John 20, verse 13. That's actually on the day of his resurrection. Several of the apostles, actually all of them except for Thomas, see Jesus in John chapter 20, verse 19, again on the first day of the week. And then a week later, Jesus appears to all of the apostles, including Thomas, in John chapter 20, verse 26. So we keep seeing this recurring theme, that the first day of the week is so significant that Jesus deliberately appears to his saints on the first day of the week. Go ahead, Dwayne.
Not the day of Pentecost on the first day of
the week. That's the next point we're going to go over.
Sorry.
So just to do a little bit of math here, what was the day of Pentecost? What does that mean?
50 days after.
Yeah, 50 days after what?
Passover.
Yeah, 50 days after the Passover. And when was the Passover? On what day of the week?
Sabbath.
It was on the Sabbath, on a Saturday. 50 days later, then, would have been on what day?
On a Sunday.
On a Sunday.
7 weeks and one day.
Exactly. 7 weeks, so that's 49 days plus one more day brings us to Sunday. And what happened on the day of Pentecost? In Acts chapter 2, the church. Yeah, it was the beginning of the church. So Jesus rises from the dead on a Sunday, and then 50 days later, his church is established on a Sunday, on the day of Pentecost. About 60 years later, after that, we talked about this in Rick's class in Revelation chapter 1, verse 10. On what day of the week did John's revelation begin? He says he was in the Spirit on what day? On the Lord's Day. So the last book of the Bible, the capstone of the Bible, was written on the Lord's Day. So when we go through the New Testament, when we go through early church history, this is what we keep seeing the entire time, that the first day of the week is God's new day. It's the day that Jesus rose from the dead. It's the day that the church was established. It's the day that the book of Revelation was written. And it's the day that God has appointed, not surprisingly, for us to assemble and observe and remember the Lord's sacrifice.
Yeah, there's one more, and it's not necessarily directly tied to the table, but it's another supporting argument for 1 Corinthians 16.
Yeah.
Another first day of the week they laid aside for the collection.
Just right.
One more foundation to stand on.
Yeah, it was so well established among the churches that Paul just said, so when you come together on the first day of the week, make sure that you lay by in store so that when I come, there don't need to be any gatherings. It was just understood that Sunday was the day when churches met. In fact, Young's literal translation, I think this is in the notes, Young's literal translation reads that passage just a little differently, and it clarifies it in some ways. He says, "And concerning the collection for the saints, as I directed to the assemblies of Galatia, so also ye do ye, on every first of the week. Let each one of you lay by him, treasuring up what he may have prospered." So Young says that that should be correctly interpreted on every first of every week. Any comments or questions on what we've talked about so far?
One question or comment, maybe. On the road to Emmaus, Christ appears to these two men, and they didn't recognize until he broke bread, he said.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's a little hint there, but I kind of wondered.
Yeah, it may be. So I have a question concerning this meeting on the first day of the week. Is this something that is negotiable?
Unless everything else is.
Right. Well, expound.
Well, we have an example of the apostles and of Jesus assembling with them on the first day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he didn't. We have no example of him taking the fruit of the vine and eating the bread with them after the Passover night, but he said he would eat with them in his kingdom. But I guess my thought was, if something that is set out this clearly in the Bible is negotiable, then and it's the most important thing that we do as Christians, then isn't everything else negotiable?
Right, right. Other comments?
Isn't there a verse in Deuteronomy that says don't add to it or take away from it?
Yeah. That's correct.
Where did Wednesday nights come about?
Well, Ben wants me to talk about that too. So really the question that leads into is how often should the saints be meeting?
I think it goes back to Dwayne's first comment. There's the one prescribed time that we see over and over by example, and then as the elders, with the caveat, as the elders see fit to feed the flock.
Right. Was Sunday the only day that the saints were meeting?
No.
No, not at all. How do we know that?
They were meeting every day.
Sometimes, at least in the beginning, they were meeting every day. If we go back to Acts chapter 2, I don't have it in my notes, but it's about verse 40.
46. So continuing daily with one accord in the temple, breaking bread from house to house, they ate them with gladness and simplicity of heart, praising God.
Right, very good. So we do have at least one example where the church was getting together all of the time. Now, whether or not those were assemblies, I don't know. But they were together very often. Clayton, did you have a direction that you wanted to go with that question?
No, I was just thinking if we're saying that Sunday's non-negotiable, and I think that's probably right. If we want to do away with Wednesday, we want to add a Wednesday, Thursday.
Yeah.
I think back to Dwayne's point, that's very doable, whatever the elders. But we see a lot of congregations changing that around, and so I just was curious. I mean, was the Wednesday night just a middle of the week kind of thing that somebody came up with and thought, well, that's a good... Where did that tradition start?
I don't know where the tradition started. I think it was a good tradition, but it is a tradition, which is important for us to always to remember. Go ahead, Dwayne.
Yeah, I might relate a story.
Okay.
Years ago, when I was working with a church down in Oklahoma, a small church, they had an older man there who would not come to church on Wednesday night. He was a farmer, lived out by the way. He's a big rancher, actually. But he never came to church on Wednesday night. And I talked to him about it, and he said, where is it at in the Bible? Show me where it's at in the Bible. First day of the week? Yes. He was always there on the first day of the week. Pretty faithful member on the first day of the week. but he never would come on Wednesday night. Hmm. And of course, they didn't have leadership, except I was kind of leading them from afar, going down there about once a month. But tried to point out that when the congregation decided that they would have meetings, then that should be a mutual decision that they made. And I felt like he was obligated to come, but he never did.
Yeah,
I think part of what I know about it is not necessarily that you meet on Wednesday night, but that many congregations meet during the middle of the week just because, you know, how many days would you go without eating food before
right.
you get weak? And it's to feed, it's to help keep Christians strong. And not all congregations do. Not all congregations can. You know, where my mom's at, and a lot of congregations are very, very small.
Right.
And
scattered out.
They're scattered out, and it's not really possible for them, and some of them are very old, and it's just not possible for them to make it three or four times a week.
Right.
But they do their best to be there on Sunday, on the Lord's Day morning.
Right.
I get the impression that people used to try a whole lot harder to make the services than we do now. You know, he brings up Grandma Dixie, and you hear these stories about people getting their horse and buggy, and they go to this farm church. I mean, there were probably more of them rural back then, but take them maybe a couple hours to get to services, but they were there.
Right.
Sometimes they spent the whole day.
Right.
Because it was such a journey. How tough is it for us to hop in the car and drive 10 or 15 minutes to meet with the saints?
Yeah, the assembly is a really special occasion, and we should think of it like that. So we have some other questions that we need to address, and these are potentially deep, difficult questions, so I'll go ahead and ask some of them.
Go ahead. Sunday night, we're also saying it's negotiable, then. It's just like Wednesday night, is that what we're saying?
Well, in my opinion, yes. I mean, there's one assembly that God requires that we continue to observe, and that's the assembly on Sundays when we observe the Lord's table. So that's definitely not negotiable. The other times the churches meet, that's up to our elders to establish. They're only negotiable in the sense that Bob and Dwayne get to decide when we come together. But if we're a part of this congregation, the objective is that we're here together as often as we can be whenever Bob and Dwayne decide that it would be profitable for us to meet.
We need to realize, too, that's not an arbitrary thing necessarily.
Yeah.
It needs to be in conjunction and a common agreement with the whole congregation. But, you know, it gets into, under the New Covenant, it gets into a matter of the heart, this attendance. Because we should, anytime there's an assembly, whether here or close by, Nixa or wherever, we should want to go mm-hmm. and feed ourselves and be fed.
Right.
And participate in fellowship with one another. Back in the Old Testament, in the latter of books, I can't remember, it says that, and they met often together. There's that term.
Right.
From Zechariah or one of those chapters. And I think that attitude should be part of a Christian attitude.
Sorry, I want to go back to this one more time. So on the Sunday morning, you had used the word command, and I don't know. So do we feel like it is a command, or was it an example, or was it inferred? I know we kind of used those three things, but
in my understanding, I think they should be seen as one and the same. Now, exactly how God communicates his will for us sometimes changes. You know, sometimes he does it sort of in the style of the Ten Commandments. This is what you will do. This is what you won't do. Sometimes God does that. Sometimes we see this is just how the church operates. We're given an example. And then, of course, the other one is sometimes we have to make inferences. We have to just look at all the facts and fill in the missing pieces, which is okay. I mean, if that's how God chooses to communicate with us, that's how we'll take it. But that's a big subject, Clayton.
Well, yeah, I didn't mean to sidetrack.
That's okay.
I think it's important because, like you say, we do, to Mike's point, we do a ton of things off of example.
Right.
And just because it's an example, we would say it's non-negotiable, probably.
Right. The way I look at it is Jesus gave the apostles the mission of establishing and managing the church in the first century, and so I think it's always in our best interest to look as much like that church as we can. And, you know, that's part of the reason we don't use instrumental music. That's among the reasons that we observe the Lord's table on Sunday, every Sunday, and only on Sundays, because under the authoritative guidance of the apostles, that's what the church did. That's how they operated. And to not do what they did would be to exercise our own judgment. And I'm not about to exercise my own judgment on this. Not when I've got Jesus and God and the apostles to do it for me. Dwayne and then Bob.
Yeah, you know, I think this is a principle, actually, that was set that's pretty much cast in stone for me, at least. Because you take that the same idea, what we talked about, where do we meet? Well, if we go by the examples in the New Testament, we would meet in our homes. See, we don't use that one as a set principle. That was an example of what they did, and it's fine if we want to do that. But when do we meet? That the first day of the week is a principle that's very firmly established.
And the reason there's a difference, I think it's good to clarify this, the reason there's a difference between the example of meeting in homes and the example of meeting on Sundays, there's zero spiritual significance assigned to meeting in homes. It's just an incidental fact that appears in the Bible. That is not true of meeting on Sundays, though. We have an example, and then we have this whole body of information pointing at why that's such a big deal, because of all the big things that happen on Sunday. Jesus rose, the church was established, the book of Revelation was written. So just because we have an example doesn't make it a binding, authoritative example. God has to put some significance to it, which he does with the Lord's table on Sundays, but he does not with meeting in homes. So, did you have something too, Bob?
It's kind of on the order of what he brought up. Because we already talked about that issue of meeting in this building as opposed to meeting somebody's home. And the first thing somebody's going to say to us is, well, wait a minute, you said that you follow examples and inferences and commands.
Right.
You know, but that bring those three issues up. Well, okay, so how come we're not meeting in somebody's home?
Right. Well, and like I said, I think the answer is God assigns, you know, some visible spiritual significance to his examples. We can see that meeting on Sunday, it's not arbitrary at all. It was deliberate, calculated. Other things, though, are not like that. Is that kind of what you were getting to?
That's what I was saying, is that we've got to be careful about throwing that word example around.
Right.
Isn't there also historical writings of the early church meeting and breaking bread in synagogues? Or in other public places other than homes?
Yeah, I mean, they would definitely meet in other public places.
Maybe not synagogues, but other. I think I've read that they met in other public places other than individual homes.
Well, Ben talked about that last week. They met in a school. Paul met with Christians in a school one time. They, you know, meet under a tree sometimes. So I do have a couple questions that I don't want to leave out before we close this subject for this morning. So one question, I hope is an easy question, is what about Saturday evenings? Would it be appropriate for us to meet on a Saturday evening and observe the Lord's table on a Saturday evening? I see some heads shaking no.
Because we don't live under the Jewish law.
Okay.
If we lived under the Jewish law and the day still started at 6 in the evening, probably would be.
So what if you were a Jew who was a Christian living in Israel where their days literally start at sundown?
Well, they're still not under the Mosaic dispensation. They're not under the Jewish law because there is no such thing as Jew or Gentile.
That's
under Christianity.
Yeah, well, I think we have to watch and not be arbitrary on this and mm-hmm. say we can't do that because I don't believe it's advisable. I wouldn't suggest that we start, you know, meeting on Sunday or Saturday evening, but and I don't know that the day starting at 6 o'clock. I don't know that that's an old law thing. It's a Jewish thing,
right?
And I don't know if any other nationalities observe that. We don't. You know, our time I guess starts at what, midnight.
I'll give you my opinion on it, and it's just that it's an opinion. You can take it or leave it. I don't think it would be a good idea for us to do that, but I don't think it would be wrong either. And here's why. In Genesis, I mean, long before the law, thousands of years before the law, God counted time with a new day starting at sundown. So in the way God measures time, Sunday actually started yesterday at sundown. That was not a Mosaic law thing. I don't even think it was a Jewish thing. This was a God thing. From the very beginning, in Genesis chapter 1, verse 5, God called the light day and the darkness night, and so the evening and the morning, in that order, were the first day. So the evening and the morning were the first day. That's how God measures time, and that goes all the way back to the fifth verse of the Bible. It continues all the way through the Old Testament and even into the New Testament. So to say that it wouldn't be appropriate, I think, is not appropriate. I think we could do that because that's how God measures time. Now, do I think that's a good idea? Probably not, because in our culture, that's not how we measure time, and it would create unnecessary confusion. But to label it as absolutely wrong, I think we should be careful to do that. Larry, and then Dwayne, and then Eddie.
It's like everything that was in the Old Testament describes the Sabbath as being a day of rest, not a day of beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a distinction that God made with that. He wanted to rest on the Sabbath.
Yeah, I agree. Dwayne?
The Lord, it's obvious the Lord arose on the first day of the week.
Right.
And I mean in the morning.
Right.
And on our Sunday time. Because it was early in the morning. If it was early in the morning on Saturday, it'd be on Saturday. So that points to me, that's pretty strong encouragement to meet on Sunday morning.
I was thinking about that too, but, you know, do we know that Christ arose after the sun came up?
Yeah, well,
do we?
It says
we know that the women went very early in the morning as it began to dawn.
Oh,
it's already risen.
It said when the sun had risen.
Huh?
It said when the sun had risen.
What
he was gone by that time. Mark 16, 2.
Yeah. So we don't know exactly what time he came out of.
He rose when it was dark then.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that we could look at. And like I said, we may have some differing opinions.
Ted, if you go back to,
yes, sir,
Acts chapter 20, verse 7, though, if you look at that verse and dissect it down, the disciples, the church action, and upon the first day of the week when the disciples, the church action is that they came together to do what? Take the Lord's Supper.
Correct.
So it doesn't matter where we go in the world. It has to be on the first day of the week. If you count time from dark and you're telling me it's on the first day of the week, I don't have a problem with that. But if it's on Saturday,
right, yeah,
because it's got to be on the first day of the week.
I agree with that completely. However we measure time, it has to be on the first day of the week. And so that's why in our culture, Saturday night is Saturday night. And so I think it would be a bad idea to do it on Saturday evening because to Americans, Saturday night is not the first day of the week. And that's kind of your point, isn't it?
Right. Because we have churches of Christ today that take the Lord's Supper on Saturday. And that's wrong.
Right.
This is not a command as you start the class. This is either an example or it's interest.
Right.
And that's got to be on the first day of the week because it gets specific. It excludes all other days when it says the first.
Right. I agree. I agree completely. So another question that we should address, and this one will take up more time than we have left, so Ben may get to finish it next week. So we've talked about how the church does have assemblies other days than Sunday. Does everyone agree with that? Not everyone does agree with that. There are some people that think that the only true assembly we have is when we gather for the Lord's table. So it looks like we all basically share the opinion that we do have true assemblies other days than Sundays. Like, for example, Sunday evening would be an assembly and Wednesday evening would be an assembly. And so the question is, when is the church assembled? What is the assembly? When is the assembly? And so maybe the way that we should start answering that question is with this question. Is every meeting of Christians an assembly?
Not necessarily in the official sense.
Right.
That
we're talking about.
Right. Are you talking about a worship assembly? What kind of assembly are you talking about?
I'm talking about the way that God uses the word assembly, right? It does get complicated, but I'm afraid that we make it complicated. Let me give you just a few examples that I have in mind. If the whole church, well, for example, like our New Year's Eve festivities, the whole church is gathered together, we're enjoying fellowship with each other, but is that the assembly?
No.
It's not the assembly. Why is it not the assembly?
We didn't come for the purpose to remember the Lord and worship Him in that form of sense.
Right, right. That's the implication behind it. And this is one of those inferences that we have to make. Not every time Christians are together do we have an assembly. And the reason that is important, the rules change between when we have an assembly and when we don't have the assembly. Another example that we can give. You know, if a baseball team gets together and go out and they have dinner together, does that mean that you're at a baseball game just because you have a baseball team together? No, not at all. And so the same thing is true with our assembly. Just because the church is together does not mean that we have an assembly. And it's important to know that. There are times when Christians are together where it's not the assembly. Acts chapter 18 is a good example. Does anyone remember what happens at the end of Acts chapter 18? Priscilla and Aquila and Apollos are together. So there you have a meeting of Christian minds, but was that an assembly in the formal sense? It was not an assembly. Christians were together, but it was not an assembly. Go ahead, Eddie.
They took him aside, didn't they?
Right. They did take him aside, which tells us, brings us to what I think is another important point. The assembly is the public meeting of the church. It's the called out meeting of the church, and it is a public assembly. A private Bible study is, I think, one way that you could describe that. That is not the assembly. And like we've already said, it's important to make that distinction, because can you do in a private Bible study the same things that you can do in the assembly? And can you do the same things in the assembly that you might do in a private Bible study?
No.
Not at all. Not at all. If three or four of us decide to get together on a Sunday morning before church and have a Bible study, does that make it appropriate for us to have the Lord's table?
No.
Not at all. That would not be appropriate.
It goes to the appointed time. There's an appointed time made. Like an elder, the elders might say, we're going to have the Lord's Supper at 2 o'clock.
Right, right.
And this is when we're going to assemble, because that's when everybody can get there. That's the appointed time.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Another reason, like I've already kind of alluded to, it is important to make that distinction, because there are certain things we can and cannot do depending on when it's the assembly and when it's not. God has set a certain order in place. And Ben will talk about some of those things later, I'm sure. Dwayne, did you have a comment?
Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, I believe, is what you're talking about.
Right, that's the idea.
That's talking about the called out, the time of assembly for the congregation.
Right. Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
We can do it other times, as you said, and we can worship at those other times. But that's not the assembly, the called out assembly.
Let me give you just a few more examples to make this point as clear as we can. For example, in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, the first half of 1 Corinthians chapter 11 is talking about the appropriate time for men and women to pray and prophesy with their heads covered or uncovered. And at a glance, you might think that that was talking about the assembly, but we know it's not, because when we get down to verse 17, here's what he says. Now, in giving these instructions, starting with the instructions he was about to give, now, in giving these instructions, I do not praise you, since when you come together, since you come together not for the better, but for the worse. For first of all, so this is his first criticism of their assembly. First of all, when you come together as a church, I hear that there are divisions among you, and I, in part, believe it. So he says, first of all, when you come together as an assembly. Dwayne?
It's the ecclesia.
Yes.
It's the called out.
Right. So the first half of chapter 11, he's talking about men and women together praying and prophesying together. But then he goes on to talk about the assembly uniquely, as a separate subject completely. And so there's one good example of when you can have Christians together and it not be the assembly, but then have a new appointed time where the church comes together for a specific purpose. So we're out of time. Any comments or questions, Matt?
Well, when the Lord himself said, you know, when two or three are gathered in my name or assembled in my